Earlier this month, an eco-socialist party, Inuit Ataqatigiit, won a snap election in Greenland with 37% of the vote in what was described as a virtual referendum over a controversial proposed uranium and rare earth mining project by an Australian company, Greenland Minerals Limited. The election followed the collapse of the previous coalition government, which was about to give the mine the go-ahead. The proposed mine in Gwenfjeld, in the south of Greenland, the largest island in the world, sought to exploit what is claimed to be the world's second largest deposit of rare earth oxides and the world's sixth largest deposit of uranium. Now, Greenland is an autonomous territory in the Kingdom of Denmark, but the Greenland government has control over natural resources on the island. I spoke with Niels Henrik Huge from Friends of the Earth Denmark about this development.
Well, yes, there are 31 seats in the Greenlandic parliament in Atsisartut, and the winning party, as you mentioned, Inuit Ataqatigiit, now has 12 of these 31 seats. So obviously they have to form a government coalition, and it's most likely that they will get together with one of the smaller parties that are also anti-uranium mining, namely Parti Naalaraq, which control 4 seats. So they will be in a position to have a majority of 1 seat, which is not much. A third party, Atsisartut, might enter the coalition. They have 2 seats, so that would give them a little bigger margin, but perhaps not too much. All these 3 parties are against uranium mining in general, and the Kvænefjeld mining project in particular. This opposition by Inuit Ataqatigiit has lasted at least since 2013, where the now sidelined government party, the former government party, Siumut, repealed the so-called uranium ban in Greenland in order to accommodate Greenland's Minerals Limited, this Australian mining company that owns the Kvænefjeld project. At that time, they stated that they would not proceed with the Kvænefjeld mining project, which is also a rare earth mining project, if they were not allowed to exploit the uranium. So there was a conflict, and it has lasted ever since.
So is it how big an issue was this in this election campaign?
A decision in the licensing process was imminent, because there's an ongoing environmental impact assessment, which is supposed to stop at June 1st, and because there was at that time community election, and the Siumut party, the former government party, stood to lose a lot of seats in southern Greenland, where almost 80% or more of the population are against uranium mining, because all the big uranium mining projects are located in southern Greenland. So suddenly they started to hesitate, because they had the prospect of losing a lot of municipality seats. So the other government party, Demokratiet, left the coalition, because they were very fixed, very set on providing Greenland's Minerals Limited an exploitation license. So certainly, also, there was a general election at the same time at the municipality election. mining was suddenly at the middle of this general election because it actually caused the split of the government and the calling of this general election. So this election was actually in Greenland dubbed the uranium election, and that was probably the determining factor in this not surprising election win for Inuit at the Kit, because it was expected. There had been polls a month ago predicting exactly this result.
Now, can you tell me a little bit about this Inuit Ataqatigiit party? Because it was earlier on in the government, at the beginning of self-government or home rule for Greenland, and there was some criticism that while it was seen to be eco-socialist something party, that it did implement a legislation that would make mining easier, and there was criticism from I suppose the left in Denmark about this. So how strongly committed is this party to the environmental issues?
Well, I would, Inuit Ataqatigiit is like all the other parties in Greenland, 90% of the population are Inuit. It's an Inuit party, so it's in that sense, it doesn't differ from any of the other parties. It is special in one respect, in my opinion. I would call it a classical Green Party, perhaps. Like the Green Party in Australia, it is centre-left, but I wouldn't call it socialist because you there are no socialist parties in Greenland. They have a flat tax, for instance, not progressive taxing. And among the Nordic countries, except for Russia, perhaps, it's the most unequal, socially unequal society in the Nordic countries. It also differ from the other parties, or at least the other major parties in the Greenlandic parliament. In one respect, it's not a populist party. I would assert that in Greenland, the political division, main division, is not left or right, but it's populist versus non-populist, and it's actually a party that take scientific facts very seriously. They don't lie to the electorate as has been done in Greenlandic politics, at least from 2013, where they lifted this uranium ban. One of the big issues since then and even before has been the assertion that if you just have enough large-scale mining, and if you just have enough oil and gas extraction in Greenland, then you can be economic self-sufficient, and then you can be independent from Denmark. But that is actually not the case, because scientific reports from Copenhagen University and Greenland University in Nuuk has long ago established that that is not possible. I mean, you have to have, according to them, at least 24 concurrent large-scale mining projects, and that is completely unrealistic. And even if you have that, when these natural resources run out, you will be in a position like before, only worse. So that is, in my opinion, how Inuit Ataqatigiit differs from at least the other major government party. It's not populist, and it takes politics and scientific fact very serious.
What is that party's links with the grassroots campaigners for environment, for instance? Is there, you know, are they involved with this, or are these is there any connection or influence, grassroots influence in the IA?
Well, Greenland has a population of less than 60,000, and that's not much for such a big island and such a big country. So, as you might expect, there are not many NGOs in Greenland. But there is a cooperation between the Danish, the Greenlandic green NGOs and green groups with the Danish NGO community. In Denmark, and I could imagine in Greenland, it's not, I mean, for principal reasons, green NGOs do not cooperate closely with political parties. I mean, there's a line there that should not be crossed. However, obviously, there's also an overlap because many, if not most, of the members and the politicians in Inuit Ataqit, for instance, are also active in the green movements as private citizens. There is an informal cooperation, obviously, and I would have to say that I mean, I've been involved in this cooperation from Denmark with Greenlandic NGOs for give or take 7 or 8 years, and I have never encountered green activists from political parties in Greenland from other than Inuit Ataqatigiit. But they are very active also in the grassroots work, for sure. And in my opinion, that is typical of a green party. And that is what it is. It is what Inuit Ataqatigiit is, in my opinion.
There must be a lot of pressure on any party arguing for independence or more autonomy or continuing autonomy for Greenland to deal with the question of where, how would you get to generate revenue, etc. What are the other alternatives to mining, because it's that are being discussed in Greenland for Greenland's future?
Well, first, I think that one misunderstanding should be gotten out of the way. Greenland is not a poor country. Actually, if you look at the average income in the European Union, a citizen of Greenland is actually above this average. However, in light of Greenland's ambition, and all the political parties have that ambition to be self-sufficient, then this current economy is not enough, because to some degree it's reliant upon the block grants from Denmark, which amounts to on the average 500 million euros per year. That would be in Australian dollars perhaps 700 million. I could imagine. I mean, by Greenlandic standards, that's a lot, but not by Danish standards, I guess, because the population is so small. So there is an internal pressure to get other sources of revenue. But the Greenlandic BNP is, as I mentioned, not that low. So it would be a question of a more equal distribution of wealth, and also a question of obtaining more revenue from the fishing industry, because I think it's 90% of Greenland's export that is consists of fishing products. But the problem is that the quotas, I mean, what you are allowed to fish is because because they want to prevent overfishing, is divided up into quotas. And a lot of these quotas are owned by fishing fleets that are not from Greenland, and also the fishing ships themselves. So if fishing, which is and will also be in the future the main source of income, was organized a bit different, a lot of this pressure in order to have large scale mining would probably disappear. And you also have to understand that the benefit. I mean, there are two large scale mining projects in Greenland that are you could use the word mature. I mean, they are imminent, and both are owned by Australian mining companies.
Include
the one in Cranefield you have heard about, obviously. But there's also another mining project, not far far from there, just by very close by Greenlandic standards. Actually, it's owned by Tenbris.
Tenbris.
The owner is Greg Barnes, I think, and it's also a rare earth mining project. But you also have uranium there. You actually have uranium because of the special composition of this ore in southern Greenland in all the rare earth mining projects. And actually, currently there was the latest assessment was from February. There are now 90 large-scale mining areas in Greenland, most of them in southern Greenland, and most of them are open pit, potential open pit mines, and you have them everywhere where Greenland can be inhabited by people, in effect, where there's no ice. So actually, everywhere where people can live and you have biodiversity, and in the future, because of global warming, the prospect of farming, you have now mining areas for large-scale mining projects. And that would be prospecting areas, exploration areas, or in some few cases, yet exploitation areas. And in addition to that, you have 50 small-scale areas also. So I would say that the Cranefield project is only the top of the iceberg. I mean, there's now a pro-environment government in Greenland, and they have major challenges, in my opinion, in the future, because they have to deal with these problems.
That was Niels Henrik Huge from Friends of the Earth Denmark. Well, I next spoke to Søren Sondergaard, who is an MP in Denmark with the Red-Green Alliance.
The Arctic is becoming more and more a center of global politics. And the reason for that is that the ice is melting, which leads to that you can cut a lot of hours from sailing over the North Pole instead of going through the down under, through the Suez Canal. So you can, British companies, Chinese companies and things like that, they can really transport things much faster. And of course, it raises a lot of security concerns, and it raises a lot of both security in terms of military security, but also in terms of search and rescue operations and the risk for Titanic experiences and things like that. So, and the second, and then of course mining, it's deep sea mining is possible when the ice is away. So, yeah. And fishing rights, it's a lot of things there. And then, of course, the other thing is that Iceland has a lot of rare, I don't know the English word.
Rare earth? Minerals?
Yeah, minerals.
Minerals. Rare earth, yeah.
Rare minerals.
Yeah, it's rare earth is used a lot in, new technologies, electronics,
yes, exactly.
Military.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And therefore, there's this problem that the ones who control that, you know, today China control a lot of the rare minerals. And if, of course, it's very important who's going to control the rare minerals in Greenland. So therefore, Greenland and the Arctic is in center of, you know, global politics. And of course, Denmark is not an Arctic country, very, very, very far away. But we are in a, we have a kingdom, United Kingdom, with Greenland and Faroe Island. And Greenland is a part of course, centrally in Arctic. So therefore, I guess that, therefore Denmark is involved still. You know, we have 175 members of the Danish parliament. And two more elected in Greenland and two more elected in Faroe Islands. So altogether we are 179. But then they also have their local parliament and they have home rule on a lot of areas. For example, they had the home rule on minerals, but they don't have the home rule on foreign affairs politics. Yeah. So therefore, the question in Kvanefjell was that at the same time, you opened up for harvest rare minerals, you also opened up for uranium. And therefore, there has been a lot of discussion, should Denmark be involved, things like that. And in the beginning, there was, to be quite honest, a very stupid and not very mature way of handling this problem in the in the Greenland government. They said, you know, they didn't have any concern whether it was pollution or whether it was uranium or whatever. But then in the last years, there has developed an environment movement in Greenland, green movement. And you have also seen a strengthening of this party, Inuit Ataqatigiit. For a long time, it has been a plus 20% party, so it has not been a small party, and it has been in the government before. But now it has developed even further, plus 30% party, so, and the biggest party. So this has led to that this election campaign was very hard and very different. And there was two main questions. In the election campaign, you can say three, fishery was also a question. But then there was a question of the social welfare and the climate and the environment and the, especially the Kvanefjell. Inuit Ataqatigiit is not against mining in Greenland. I mean, they are not, you know, everything should be as it is, but they also want to develop a farming industry, sheeps, corn, different things, agricultural things in the south of Greenland. Because of climate change, it is now possible. I mean, there's a reason why it's called Greenland. There was a time way back, but now it started to get green again in the south of Greenland.
Yeah, and if not for that moment in time, the Nordic connection would not have existed.
Exactly.
Yeah. We all watched the Vikings program here, so we know about it.
So there's a huge welfare crisis. And then there's this crisis, not about mining in as such, but unsustainable mining, and especially the uranium. And Inuit Ataqatigiit have been the leading force in having a more balanced approach to mining, a more sustainable approach to mining. And in the south of Greenland, where the Kvanefjell mining is, I mean, they got more than 50% of the votes. So, I mean, they really got a huge success. There's only four municipalities in Greenland, but in the southern part, they got more than 50%. So they are really very, very strong on that. This is, of course, a confrontation with a part of the mining industry. who have planned to build there. Some of the mining industry can use other mines in other parts of Greenland, on more remote areas, not very close to farming areas, not very close to populated areas as we have in the south of Greenland. But of course, now there is some kind of a confrontation. And I guess that the Australian mining company and the Chinese are very angry right now. So,
Australian mining companies, so one of them claimed to have a connection with the Donald Trump plan to buy Greenland.
Probably correct. I mean,
they were boasting about it in Bloomberg, apparently.
Yeah. Okay. But if people don't know anything about Greenland, yeah, of course, it's also quite easy to make. I mean, he said
joke,
it's,
yeah,
basically it's a big real estate deal. That's what Donald Trump was saying. And of course, you have a huge, huge land. And then you have 50,000 people. 50,000 people. It's very, very few people. And of course, a lot of things is very different as a part of Arctis, but also because it's a quite small community. You know? And in some ways, you can say the former political parties who were leading for many years after the Danish decolonization was clan parties, Atassut and Siumut. It was, you know, all the leaders had the same names and things like that. It was clans. But now it has changed. And Inuit Ataqatigiit, Gatigiit, just to IA, just to give a few words about them. They were formed, I think in the 70s, but they were formed as a clearly left party, pro-independent. And they were formed by Greenlandic youngsters who have been in Denmark and was a part of the Danish left movement. And you know, they were on some of the universities with very huge left-wing presence. And many of them was also members of different left groups. So basically what they did was that they built a left alternative in Greenland, and then they started it as a movement. Inuit Ataqatigiit means Inuit people coming together. So they started to have meetings every year called Ataqatigiit, coming together. And then from that, they formed a party, which then is called Inuit Ataqatigiit. And they quite sudden became a substantial force in Greenland. And they have been in government one time, but now they are very big. We see them as our sister party in Greenland, right, and Socialist People's Party also see them as a sister party.
Right.
So you can say that in Denmark, they would be the same as Socialist People's Party and our party. And especially on foreign affairs and things like that, they are more on the line on us, but the Red Green Alliance, but on questions on industrial development and things like that, they are more moderate, you can say. And that's, I mean, it's also because a lot of things normally in our vocabulary, nationalization, blah, 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 whatever. I mean, in Greenland, it's totally different. It's because it's such a small community. So they really have to find their own way, and they have to be able to develop without being grabbed by the superpower. And that also what Inuit have understood. They understood that if there was a fast succession, independence from Denmark, they would not be independent. They would be instead dependent on the United States or on Russia or on China. So Inuit and Gadigit have changed. So their perspective is, they have a perspective of independence, and they want to build up in capacity to be independent, but they want to maintain links to Denmark until that moment. So now we have this situation where they try to balance between United States, Russia, China, Denmark, sometimes using them against Denmark, sometimes using Denmark against the others, you know, try to balance.
Well, that was Søren Sondergaard from the Red-Green Alliance in Denmark. I tried to contact Inuit Ataqatigiit to get a direct comment from them, but we have not been successful yet. Hopefully sometime in the near future.